Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Corolla Drinks fans, 818 Rye Whiskey is available now at CorollaDrinks.com. 818 is a whiskey from Adam's backyard, not the gated communities in the same area code. It's aged 3 years in new American oak and couples a malty sweetness with a complex rye finish. Adam and the team made this whiskey for fans of the show. They made this whiskey for the regulars. Get your bottle of 818 Rye at CorollaDrinks.com. Hurry, we will sell out.
Well, in this show, we'll get into the Supreme Court and take a deep dive into Brittany and the conservatorship. Mark has many thoughts on that. He's passionate on Britney Spears. We'll get into all that. First, I'll tell you about Geico. Do you own, do you rent your home? Well, sure you do. One or the other, right? Then there's your automotive policy. Well, how about you get your bundle working with Geico? Take your homeowners or your renter's insurance and bundle it up with your automotive policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. Geico makes it easy. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save and how easy it is to save when you bundle at geico.com.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. A choice, but got a mandate. Get it on. Welcome to the best hour or so in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Mark Garagus in the downtown office.
I'm going to see if I can get the background off and see if you can figure where I am. There you go.
I think you're at home.
Bingo. Could you tell by the Statue of Liberty behind
Yes.
you've spent many a moment in this particular room with the Statue of Liberty and another kind of obelisk type object that contained brown fluid.
That object would be Mark Garagus.
Uh-huh, exactly.
On a personal note, I went to your beautiful daughter Tenny's wedding registry this morning because the wedding is coming up and saw that everything was spoken for. I mean, there was a champagne flute and a keychain was all that was left, and maybe a Beanie Baby or something. Like, they're... You guys, man, I mean, somebody bought up every big ticket item on that registry. So
I've told Tenny I have a theory that if people don't want to come, they feel guilty and they just buy something. And she says, no, Dad, because we've kind of exceeded the number of people that we should have. So I'm going to have to buy extra security.
I ended up just buying the card at the very bottom that said I was going to get you the espresso machine for $1,300, but, and it was just dot, 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 I got you this card.
this is a good routine, but why do I have so much doubt about you actually going on the registry?
I thought I got to talk to Mark. The wedding is coming up. How the hell does it work with the Armos? Do you bring cash in a manila envelope? Like, I'm Italian, so that's how those weddings work. But I don't know. I don't know if she's registered. I don't know. I didn't know registering was still a thing. I had a thing which I liked, and you tell me what you think, because Tenny's fine, you know, whether she gets another duvet cover or or Cuisinart.
How many? How about the china and the other little knickknacks?
She's going to land on her feet. But I had this idea as it pertained to our own Chris Laxamana, who's also has a wedding coming up soon enough
and
as well.
And Gina also.
And Gina as well. I said, look, for the folks that, you know, don't need the crock pot but would like something more substantial, Chris wants a deck on his house, right? Now, I don't know anyone that's going to pony up 14 grand to get a deck put on the back of his house. But if we all just bought shares of the deck,
Ooh, I like that.
Then he would get a deck on his house instead of a bunch of chafing dishes and pottery he's never going to use. You know what I mean? Like, let's all just go in. There's enough people, you know, to put down a $200 bid, or maybe a high roller like yourself could pay $1,000 and, you know, get the bench built in at the end of the deck.
You know why that's a brilliant idea? How many times, I don't know about you, but how many times I've gotten a gift and I've opened it up and it's on whatever occasion, it's like a thank you or it's just, I open it up and then there's a small card in it. And the card is like, to your wedded bliss or something. It was a re-gifted gift.
Right.
And that's a whole, there's a whole subculture of that.
Adam, when you came up with this theory, I realized that in my home, there is a piece of furniture that is full of plates and glasses and stuff I have never used that would easily fund a deck. And I would much rather have that.
Yeah. I mean, and we could sell it in shares. We could also have a graph that said, you know, like kind of a GoFundMe page where they're like, you're right up to, you know, 3/4 of the deck is built. We still need the last 6 feet, you know, so buy up. It's great for the young couple that is starting out, especially the first time homeowner and so on and so forth. So I announced it's brilliant, but it was rejected. And
Who rejected it? Women.
I don't know. I think it must. Yeah, the wives don't. You know why? Because it's too practical. That's what it is. They want some keepsake, and all they're going to do with the keepsake is argue over who gets it during the divorce. That's it. Meanwhile, the deck is adding value to the home.
The house, so at least for the divorce, you get cash back when you,
and
you get it. Can you imagine? I want a bathroom remodel, $20,000, and you just, that could be the same thing.
And the deck may very well prevent the divorce. Like, I'm going to go out in the deck and smoke a cigar and cool down.
Wow. Look at you.
No one ever says I'm going to go stand in the yard and do
that.
Nobody
ever says I'm going to go do a Cuisinart to cool off.
That's right. That's a very good, right. That's a very good point. No one says I'm going to go look at the serving dish that's shaped as a swan and cool down.
I'm going to go take the demitasse spoon and I'm going to. Right, unless you're doing some kind of drugs or something with it.
All right. Well, we got some breaking Chauvin news. We got Justin Stephen Breyer because Gary said you wanted to talk about the Supreme Court. And
but the Chauvin news is interesting. It came right about where I thought. You know, the Gary, what did you tell me? It was breaking news at 22.5?
Yep.
Okay. You know why this is amazing? Because I had figured it, it's part of it, the negotiating strategy, not just in criminal law, but just in all things. Let me tell you, Adam, why. I wish I had put this in an envelope for Gary to read. The presumption was 15 years. They have sentencing guidelines. Then you knew that the judge was going to go over the 15 years because there were aggravating factors, right? So you've got a band between 15 and 30. Now, it's not very complicated. You add the 15 to the 30 and you get 45. 45 divided by 2, which is what the human mind does. And what did the judge sentence him to?
22 and a half.
Right there.
I mean, right
it's
there.
It's you know, they always talk about judges as like Solomon, like wisdom and or Solomonic wisdom. But at the end of the day, it's just something that the mind always does. If I go low, you go high, the judge is going to cut the baby in half, so to speak, or in this case, sentence Chauvin to 22 and a half, which, by the way, now it's fully in the federal court's jurisdiction. Once he's going to get transferred into federal custody because they have the indictment pending against him and he will not see the light of day.
Did,
by the way, also, yeah. Gary, I don't know if you have it. I hate to surprise you with this. Twitter was going wild a little bit ago when I checked in. I wanted to see what he got. And it was because, God forbid, his mother went up there and talked about him in good terms during a victim impact. And people went wild, like the mother shouldn't talk. And I know that is Some people don't understand that, but just because you are the most hated man or you are being vilified does not mean that your lawyer is not supposed to pull out all the stops and do everything possible, including put your mother on if that's the only person who will dare talk.
Will he do all of the 22 and a half years?
As a practical matter, though, they've got a formula for reduction of that and credits for that and things of that nature. But what will end up happening is he will go into federal custody, and absent him being able to say or that he's got some kind of cooperation on rampant corruption in the police department, he's going to end up there doing the rest of his natural life.
Really?
My prediction, yeah.
Yeah, so he's a 7-year-old guy?
42.
A 42-year-old guy who's just going to die in prison?
Yeah. Can you imagine who the parole board would be or the judge would be that is going to let him out? That's absent him winning an appeal. I know I've heard Dershowitz talk about that the U.S. Supreme Court could take it. That's not far-fetched in this sense. If you were to be convicted federally, depending on what the evidence that they allowed in, I could see the U.S. Supreme Court weighing in. Remember, they weighed in on Kuhn and Powell out of the Rodney King case and came up with some sentencing law. So it's not out of the realm of possibility, but I think the more likely, if the U.S. Supreme Court were to take it, would be to revisit the case of Shepard versus Maxwell, F. Lee Bailey's case, because that case needs a fresh set of eyes on it. Because the idea of trying these cases, what I've always called supersized cases, in these public eyes of the storm, I just think there's got to be a different approach to it. You just cannot do it, because you're going to end up a la Scott Peterson 20 years later, having courts dispassionately look at it after 20 years and reversing. And you know, like they did with the death penalty. And then a couple of weeks ago, the DA said they're not going to retry the death penalty. And now the judge has said she's going to have a decision by August on the conviction phase. So why do we want to kind of lay that out for 20 years when there are probably better ways to try this case? Try these kinds of cases more like what the English do, where they just, as soon as the trial starts, they shut it down and you can't report on it.
You were referring to the Scott Peterson case with the judge in August?
Correct.
So the Chauvin thing, he gets 22 and a half years. And then normally, depending on the jurisdiction, you would do a percent of those 22 and a half years, normally good behavior, what have you, maybe you do half of your 22 and a half years. So then where do the feds come in? And then also, why do the feds come in? Because this wasn't a hate crime. It wasn't prosecuted as a hate crime. They did not work. I mean, the media in America look at it as a hate crime, but as far as what went on in the courtroom, race wasn't factored in to the crime. So then why do the feds come in?
The first thing on the credits vary wildly jurisdiction to jurisdiction. Just within the last year, California, which had swung, the pendulum had swung to the point where you were only the most credits you could ever get. You had to do 85% of your times in violent crimes. And there was the old sentencing guidelines about whether it's a serious felony, whether it's a violent felony, whether guns are used. All of that, which made it very harsh, has now, there's a new sentencing gambit here in California. I don't know where they're at in Minnesota, but I highly doubt it's halftime, meaning that you get 50% credit. That's that's peculiar to Minnesota. The feds are here because the feds have the ability, which was on the showcase going back to Kuhn and Powell of the Rodney King case. Because in that case, there was an acquittal, the feds came in and did a violation of their civil rights. They can come in and say, well, we're not prosecuting him on a hate crime. We're prosecuting him for violating the constitutional rights of George Floyd. And they can do that and are going to do that, presumably, with all four officers in federal court. Now, if that happens, the Supreme Court an existing precedent says that's okay. They say that's not double jeopardy. Most people have kind of a innate sense, well, wait a second here, it's the same act and it's the same mental state. So how is it that I can be prosecuted in two different jurisdictions? California used to be, if they prosecuted you federally first, they could not do it in state court. New York, same thing, used to be, they prosecute you in federal court like they did with Paul Manafort, they couldn't do it in state court. And that's why the New York state case against Manafort was thrown out for once in jeopardy. But if they do it in reverse, where you're prosecuted first in the state court, whether you win or lose, acquittal or guilt, they can still second or successively prosecute you in the federal court, which I've always thought is fundamentally unfair, because that seems to me to defeat the whole purpose of what the founders said. The founders did not want serial prosecutions. They didn't want the king, basically, or the crown. They were rebelling against this idea of just getting justice, depending on whatever the king or the crown wanted. That was what separated us from separated the colonies, at least from the motherland.
So is Chauvin then going to get more time added on federally then?
Correct. He will get convicted, my prediction. Although I don't know. I think it's an open question on two of the three officers federally. And then we'll see.
But just to be super transparent, he gets 22 and a half years for what he does, and he gets right. it locally in Minnesota. And then he'll go into the federal trial, and that federal trial will add on, you know, another 20 years, and then he'll have 42 and a half years to do?
Right. And then you could hire a battalion of lawyers to figure out, was he getting credits while his, you know, as you only have one body, but you've got two jurisdictions. So then there's questions of, do you get credits while you're sitting? For instance, right now, he's in the state system, and he's earning credits in the state system, whatever the credit calculation is. But the minute he moves to federal custody, what is the calculation going to be? Does he stop getting credits on his 22 and a half years? I mean, is it like you press pause and then your federal credits start? Can you get them taken at the same time, simultaneous credits? That's what it's going to take for the lawyers. And we don't have the time or inclination here for me to explain all the different moves you have to make as the defense lawyer. But there are questions of bail. There are questions of, in this case, he's got no bail, but there of what triggers credits in each jurisdiction, because you can only physically serve your time in one jurisdiction at a time, but you can theoretically or hypothetically serve and get credits in both.
So you're saying he's never going to see the light of day. We figured out he's 45 years of age. Normally you do a 22 and a half year sentence, and then that would get reduced by some percentage. Right. And presumably at age 45, maybe you'd be out at the age of 60. But this won't happen, because if he's found guilty federally, then they'll just tack on more time.
He also will be, you know, I hate to say about anybody, but he's going to be a target. I mean, it's very difficult for me to believe that he's going to be able to survive internally there as well. I mean, there's always that threat.
But what I'm saying is accurate. He'll have more time added on after the federal.
Right. There's the it goes without saying that the feds are going to, if they get a conviction, will make an argument that he needs to get a sentence and have a, which will tack on, be consecutive to, and not just be served what's called concurrently.
That feels like a miscarriage of justice to me, to be tried twice for the same crime and then just get separate sentences and then have them put together. I mean, that sounds insanely unjust to me.
Yeah, there's two areas of the law that have always irked me now that we the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled you have to have unanimous juries. Before the most recent ruling, there were two jurisdictions, state jurisdictions, that said you could convict somebody and put them to death without it being unanimous, which I always thought was, how is that possible in America? The two remaining places that make very little sense to me are, and these cases have gone up to the U.S. Supreme Court and back countless times, and so far it's okay. One is the idea that you can just be serially prosecuted by, for instance, the state. I mean, there was a recent U.S. Supreme Court case where a guy was tried four or five times, I believe, by the same prosecutor, just wouldn't get let go. And, you know, some were hung juries, some were reversals because of prosecutorial misconduct. I mean, at a certain point, you know, it goes back to what you and I have developed our own case law about. You have to have some kind of a budget, but the public prosecutor doesn't. I've always felt that is, there should be some penalty when you can't make the case the first time or the second time. You just can't successively beat somebody into the ground if the jury is not buying the theory you're selling. And the other one is this very problem, which is when you have two jurisdictions that are prosecuting you for the same acts, there are theories and code sections and a developed case law in California about being punished twice for the same act. But the generally, and right now, it's legal that you can have a successive prosecution, first at the state, like Chauvin, second at the feds, and you can get more time for the very same act.
That feels really un-American to me. And it's also so random, because obviously, if you put your knee on the back of George Floyd, the feds, well, maybe you, but if Gary did it, the feds wouldn't get involved, right? So it all just sort of depends. I mean, a lot of it is just political. A lot of it is optics. A lot of it has to do with, you know, cases that are higher profile cases. But it feels exquisitely un-American.
Right now, yeah, I can tell you right now, there are cases that are, to my mind, factually, that are as reprehensible as Floyd's case and what Chauvin did, where the Department of Justice maybe got involved, but they did not prosecute. And that's, I think, is not fair. I don't think that there should be, that the Department of Justice should not kind of play to the cheap seats. They should try to do this based on the outrageousness of what has happened, and also based on the department. I think a lot of it, the whole idea of having the Department of Justice is to take a look, not cherry pick out individual acts, but to say there is a culture of a department that just needs to have something done. And that's when that's when DOJ comes in.
DOJ, right. All right, let me tell you about Geico. Do you rent your home? Will you do one or the other? And then there's your automotive policy. How about you put them together and you get your bundle on? Take your homeowner's or your renter's insurance, bundle it up with your automotive policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. So what do? Well, you go to geico.com, you get a quote, and you see just how much you could save. Geico makes it easy to save when you bundle at Geico. That is Geico.com. So you want to talk about the Supreme Court. It reminded me that Justice Stephen Breyer, who's 83 years of age, coming up in a month. Now, we already had this with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, where a lot of liberal folks were saying, step down because we can replace you before Trump gets in there and does, you know, does his own magic with someone who's more conservative. And I think they're kind of saying that there's a lot of people saying that Justice Stephen Breyer should step down now while Biden's in to have a more liberal justice appointed or nominated. And he's saying, no, none of these guys want to step down. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, the idea that somehow you can predict somebody's how they're going to develop as a U.S. Supreme Court justice, I think, is folly. You just saw within the last 10 days, President Trump I won't say going after, but expressing his disappointment over Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett. And it's interesting, we've talked about this, but it's interesting that the Supreme Court now is kind of a 3-3-3 court. And if you've got, if you can cobble it together, you, we've seen, a, you know, some 9-0 and 8-1, quite a few rulings in the last couple of weeks. So this idea that somehow if Breyer steps down, somebody's going to get on there and that person is going to develop into a sure vote. I think it's not practical. It doesn't understand human nature. And by the way, the Breyer, to some degree, I think engineered a couple of these opinions that liberals have been cheering in the last couple of weeks. And if he wasn't there, a newbie, so to speak, I don't think would have the gravitas or know the ins or the outs or have the kind of the background and institutional knowledge to have to put together and unify these. So I just think be careful what you wish for. And there's also, if you're a liberal, stick around with some of these justices. They tend to swing a little bit more towards the center than you would expect. Kavanaugh certainly has. Chief Justice Roberts certainly has. Has been more incremental. And this idea of, and I know this is, you know, you get thrown to the wolves here, but the idea that you're going to just expand the court, or you're going to just kind of try to get as many of the votes as you want, that can backfire on you as well. I just think we want the court. There should be protection for the court. If you wanted to do something, then maybe put age limits on it or make it like Court of Appeals justices and Supreme Court justices in California, where, you know, at the trial level, it's a 6-year term and you have to run for re-election. And at the appellate level, it's a 14-year term. So you could say somebody could get appointed for 14 years and then step down. And by the way, there's some pretty compelling arguments for that. Why should a U.S. Supreme Court justice have to earn the same, almost identical to what a brand new associate out of one of the Ivy Leagues makes today? And it's, you know, I just saw there's associate wars amongst the big firms. They're paying these guys straight out of law school, and they may be the smartest guys in the world, but there's no way you can justify paying them over $200,000 a year. They're not worth it. Until you've practiced law for 15 years, you don't even know how to find your way to a courtroom. And the idea of paying them 200 grand outside, or over 200 grand right outside of the box, is, you know, obviously the big firm corporate clients are paying for it, but it's complete nonsense. And why, you know, you got somebody who hasn't ever argued a case, handled a case, tried a case, standing in front of judges who they make more than, that strikes me as kind of idiotic as well.
And also, it sounds like you don't want to pay your rookies that kind of salary.
I was wondering if you were going to go there. As I started making the argument, I said, I know Adam's going to go. Yeah, I think he doesn't want to pay that kind of.
Well,
yeah,
I was thinking about you, not from an attorney standpoint, but as a restaurateur standpoint. And I was listening to Biden earlier in the week where he was kind of whispering, you know, I'm paying these guys to stay home. You want them to come back to work, pay them more. You should be paying them more. And then I thought about you, and I thought about you with all your staff and the restaurants and that kind of stuff. How's that? What's your take on that?
Well, look, I'm very fortunate. I've got great people, and I don't know why, but we're fortunate that way. I'm betwixt and between. I think that people should have, they should get, if you're really good, you should get paid really good, and you should get the kind of the perks of that. If the only thing you care about is the bottom line on the check, you're never going to be happy. And I've found that out. My experience, at least, if I can project that onto others, is my experience is you need to really learn your craft. And whether that's waiting tables, whether that's a chef in the kitchen, whether that's, some other position in hospitality, you want to be the best you can be. And then guess what's going to happen? You're going to, there's no stopping you once you're the best you can be. You know, I thought about I'm going to segue here because I've done, I can't tell you how many TV interviews this week, and I keep, you're in my head, and it's, you're the empty bag theory of yours. And it, this, let me run it through and then get your reaction. There's been an outrage because this week Britney Spears went in front of the judge because she wants to be freed from her conservatorship. She's been under this conservatorship for 13 years. And it was reported, I didn't know this, I wasn't paying attention, but that she's got an IUD, which is a birth control device that's implanted her. She wants it out, and they won't let her take it out. She's very limited in the amount of money they will give her, even though she's making and has made over these 13 years under the conservatorship tens of millions of dollars. There's been an outcry about the fact that she's, you know, there, she has all kinds of restrictions, limitations. She just wants out from under. But there is apparently a whole coterie of people around her who are cashing checks and who are saying, no, you can't handle this. Now, I'm commenting on all of that. And I've seen this for years at end of life for conservatorships. Casey Kasem, B.B. King, most recently Stan Lee. But at the same time, I'm talking to a group down at the beach, 13 miles from the downtown courthouse, which is under siege by the outdoor homeless mental illness encampment. You know, you've got along the Venice boardwalk, you've got what in essence is an outdoor insane asylum, and the inmates are running the asylum. And you know, there's now all kinds of brouhaha about that. But it's fascinating to me that we've got a woman who's under a conservatorship for 13 years and she can't reproduce. She can't control her own money. She's still out there having to earn money, do shows and produce tens of millions of dollars. Yet people who have paid for houses at a premium at the beach have to endure a, like I call it, there's no other way to put it. It's an outdoor insane asylum, because, and anybody who wants to push back on that, come see me. The fact is that there, yeah, there is transitional housing, and there are opportunities to go shelter, congruently or otherwise, that are being refused. They would rather stay on the boardwalk. And why is it that we allow the law, we say, no, we can't do anything with these people, whether it's under 5150 or a conservatorship. We can't handle this situation here where they are directly in the way of the people who paid money, number one, to own property, and number two, the people who want to enjoy the public beach, who can't enjoy the public beach because they're getting insulted. And all I think about is your empty bag theory.
Well, I was saying this to somebody a couple days ago, like half the fucking people in this country are poor or they're illiterate or they're on drugs or their family's broken up or they're barely getting by or they're making bad decisions. Why do we need to control Britney Spears? I mean, what's so different other than she's an earner? I mean, that's it, pure and simple, because if she wasn't such a cash cow, then her dad wouldn't be interested. Nobody would be interested. I mean, I understand the part where you go, well, but she's making a lot of money and you'd hate to have her blow it on X, Y, and Z. Well, tell that to MC Hammer.
Or how about telling anybody who's investing in Bitcoin?
Or anyone who just buys themselves a Lamborghini SUV from Beverly Hills Coachworks and has it wrapped in a flat orange wrap and get some 27-inch rims on it and drives it off the lot. Like, how about, well, you should tell that to most of your clients, actually. Actually, I'm thinking about it. You may want to text them as we're talking, but the point is,
I was going to say, would you, Adam is talking about you again.
I'm just saying, look, you're wasting your money, but fine. It's your money. You owned it. You know, maybe you want to buy a fucking Bengal tiger and, put a big cage in the back of your, you know, compound in Nevada. I mean, that's your prerogative. So, I mean, yes, all the people who are living on the beach, and then there's half the guys I went to high school with who had the crazy sister who needed some supervision, but she worked at a Kookaroo Chicken, so no one gave a shit. You know, it is kind of nice.
It's another ex-client, Kukuru, remember?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So my point is I hope the judge sees it that way. She's allowed to do what she wants with her life and her money. And obviously, if she was an empty bag, her dad would not be hanging around.
Well, you know, and look, I don't like to criticize judges only because I generally have to appear in front of them. But the part of the problem is that the system is set up. So the judge under a conservatorship system will appoint somebody, and that somebody is going to render an opinion. But that person is getting paid. And generally, if it looks like this is going to be an ongoing gig, whether they consciously or unconsciously think about it, you don't want to stop getting paid. And if you want to order this, if I was saying yesterday, for instance, having had represented so many brilliant clients and understanding there's a very fine line, I bet you could speak to this, but you've noticed over the years, haven't you, the fine line between genius and mental health issues. I mean, it's something I've watched sure. and had a front row seat to. What if you were to everybody who was literally a genius but had a mental health challenge? And by the way, almost, you know, it permeates every single family. I don't know anybody who doesn't have somebody in their immediate sphere who doesn't have a mental health challenge. How do you just say, okay, I'm going to take it over and I'm going to have a kind of a circle of experts, a nickel and dime squad around it that are all making money, and have this person kind of continue to be the earner in spite of the fact that they may have the mental health challenges?
Well, I have a thought to run by you, and because I'm sure that Britney Spears' father is just going to, or their representation are going to hire their experts, right, to go there and say that she's not mentally fit, so and so on, and then Britney Spears' side is going to have their own experts to controvert that thought. I have said this. I've always said this. I've said the way they ought to pick the Cub Scout leader who takes all the young boys camping on top of Mount Pinos for 3 days, the 9-year-old boys, they ought to go, who wants to volunteer to take all the 9-year-olds for 3 days up to Mount Pinos to camp? And then the first guy raises his hand, they go, Herb, you're out. All right, Stan, you do it. And then Stan goes, I don't want to do it. It's the fucking playoffs this weekend. I got the Packers. And you go, sorry, Stan, you're doing
you're
it.
Going.
Because you can be trusted around these boys because of how badly you don't want to be around these boys. Can't the judge, is there any system or might there be a system where the judge goes, you know what, I'm just going to get an independent person in here who's super qualified in the mental health department, and I'm going to put him up here. He's on nobody's payroll.
Yes. Your Mount Pinos example, that's my, I make now label it for the next book, that's my jury selection kind of mantra.
Right.
If they want onto my jury, I don't want them.
Right.
It's just period of end of story. If they're trying to get off, then I'm going to take a hard look at them. If they've every excuse in the world, I may want them. The problem again is with, this goes back to the discussion we've had on and off during the pandemic. These people who are so-called experts, and I won't mention any names right now because then nobody's going to be able to hear what you and I are talking about. But it is long been a frustration of mine in a courtroom, and it's spilled over during the pandemic, to this idea of experts. Because experts, you know, one man's expert is another man's, you know, paid mercenary. And the idea of an expert or the idea of somebody who is uniquely qualified depends on what you want them to say. You literally can find anybody, if you pay them enough, who will find generally and articulate your point of view, so to speak, as specious, as untethered from the truth as it may be. And that is a real problem. But we have elevated this idea, especially in the courts, of experts to an exalted status. I mean, there have been some great trends. The California Supreme Court, in a case called Sargon, kind of dialed that back. There's in the federal courts, there's a rather robust ability to challenge expertise, but it really is almost honored in the breach. I mean, this idea of saying, I've got to have an expert, or I've got to have this or that. My feeling is there should just be, how do you keep somebody working for 13 years under a conservatorship if the person doesn't want to be? And how do you say at the same time, look, I don't know Jamie Spears, and he could have the most, the pure altruistic motives, but you lose me when you tell me, give our family some privacy. You can't put your daughter up at a residency in Vegas and be cashing checks and having her rebel against you. Mental health challenges or not. And I don't care if you don't like the people that surround her. She's 40 years old. She's not physically infirm. She gets up in the morning. She can obviously dance. She posts some things. And I'm not saying that dancing is any prerequisite, but the fact is, these are laws that were designed for end of life. It's not designed to try to corral in people in the prime of life.
Well, how about the judge says, I'm going to end the conservatorship, but if I turn on TMZ and see you getting your head shaved in Hollywood, or it turns out you owe $5 million in back taxes 9 months from now, then I shall revisit this. Can he do a thing with some sort of guidelines?
You could. I mean, you look, what the idea that this thing has lasted for 13 years speaks to the idea that you can always adjust, you can tinker around with it. But at the end of the day, I do not believe, and I've got some unique experiences with conservatorships over the years, over the last 40 years, based on that, it's my belief that this is not what the conservatorship law and the statutory scheme was designed to address. This clearly, to me, is on the outer limits of anything. You know, I looked up because I was stunned. I looked up whether or not we still had the ability to sterilize, in essence, sterilize people by requiring them to have an IUD. And because I thought, you know, I've talked to my father-in-law over the years who, back in the 50s, they used to, if somebody was mentally disabled, there was a stream of medical thought that you would sterilize people who had mental disabilities. And I thought that was completely out of anachronistic sign of a different times. There's still I don't know that it's been challenged, but there's still a U.S. Supreme Court case from the 20s that if you check its progeny, ironically, is still good law, that's okay. And there's a statute in California which gives the authority for somebody who's under a conservatorship to not be able to procreate. To me, that's just, it's not only anachronistic, it's really, it leads you down a primrose path.
It starts getting into eugenics.
Yeah, it's exactly what it does. And by the way, that U.S. Supreme Court case, I'm forgetting what it was, Buck or whatever it was, that was related to eugenics.
Final thought then, predictions on Brittany.
Oh, there's no way they're going to keep this up. They're going to dial this back. It's going to happen very quickly. I was also, besides the IUD, I heard Adam Streisand speaking, who is a lawyer in Los Angeles, who apparently had met with her and wanted to represent her, I forget how long ago, and was not allowed to substitute in. The catch-22 of you're under a conservatorship, so you're unable to pick your own lawyer. At a certain point, you can't. There's just an inherent tension between the idea of you out there working on stage, producing tens of millions of dollars, and at the same time, you can't make fundamental constitutional rights decisions.
Okay, Mark, I know you have to hop. You have a hard out, so we'll keep this episode a little more levity. But they say, I should say brevity. Brevity. The soul of wit. All right, Mark, we'll talk soon, my friend.
Thank you, Adam. Always good to see you. Bye, Gary.
And I'll mop
Bye,
up
Mark.
With LifeLock. Recent survey, 330 million people became victims of cybercrime. Another 55 million had their identity stolen. They spent almost 2.7 billion hours trying to resolve their issues. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day, we put our info at risk on the internet. In an instant, cybercriminals could harm your finances and your credit. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. You have access to a dedicated restoration specialist if you become a victim. But protect yourself and get LifeLock. Right, Gary?
That's right. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can keep what's yours with LifeLock by Norton. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code DOUBT. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com and use promo code D-O-U-B-T for 25% off.
All right. This week, coming up a week from today, July 3rd, Anchorage, Alaska, at Coots. I'll be there. Sonny will be there. Maxipata is going to be there. A Dawson's going to be there. Come on out, man. Say hi. We're going to have a good time. And then July 16th, 17th, Raleigh, North Carolina. Go to AdamCarolla.com for all the live shows, and you can check out all our movie offerings on our Pluto TV channel, channel 687. You can subscribe to Reasonable Doubt's YouTube channel, youtube.com/ReasonableDoubtPodcast. And until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Mark Garagos saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.